Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this House Committee on Transportation Policy, Friday, February 24th, 2017. We're going to go out of order on the agenda this morning. We have our esteemed colleagues with us. So the first thing I would like to do is open a public hearing on House Bill 2208 and call to the dais Representative and Vice Chair Vile, Senator Johnson, and Senator Thatcher. Thank you for being with us this morning. Good morning.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rich Vile. I'm the representative from House District 26. And I'm here today to quickly give you an overview of a bill that we've brought to solve what we hope is a very, very rare problem that arises when ODOT acquires right-of-way for an existing property with an existing zoning, but that right-of-way then ultimately doesn't allow the property to be used for the zone that it was prepared in. We're going to put up on the screen a map to help us understand this real quickly. If you look at this map, this is an intersection in Washington County at Highway 99 and Roy Rogers Shoal Sherwood Road. You see five accesses removed on the right-hand side of the map with the lines pointing. That piece of property outlined in red is the property that's the subject of this particular bill, and again, I hope very few other properties like it around. In the mid-90s, Mr. Anderson's family, his father and mother, had a farm there. ODOT acquired those five accesses along 99W, left the family with one access on Roy Rogers Road, just around the corner there. That access is for the farming operation, the home and the farm that was the property. You can see that this has been developed now with shopping centers on all three corners of the site, other than this particular corner. When those accesses were acquired, the property was already zoned commercial. It was already in the urban growth boundary. It is now one of the last parcels in Sherwood left undeveloped because the access that they were left with will not allow for the commercial development. Both Sherwood, Washington County, all of the agencies that are dealing with this has left that alone. This bill asks for a way of necessity. A way of necessity is a legal term that is used often when someone does not have access to their property. They can apply to the courts and get a judicial decision that will give them access, but it requires them to pay the value of the property across which they have to get access, and it requires them to pay their attorney's fees. All this bill does is change those last two elements and allow a property owner, in the case where the access was acquired and they were not left with adequate access for the zoning that they had at the time, to get away a necessity and not have to pay that cost, but rather the agency that acquired the accesses would pay that cost. So it's a relatively simple concept that would apply only in the case when the agency acquiring the access, ODOT or whichever agency it might be, leaves the property owner without access sufficient for the purpose that the property is zoned for at the time the access was required. Thank you. Let's go ahead and hear from Representative.
Go ahead.
Excuse me, Senator Thatcher and Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you. I'm
Kim Thatcher, Senator from Lucky District 13. And I just wanted to be here for moral support. I appreciate the work that my colleagues have put in on this, and I would like to defer to them. Sometimes there's just problems that constituents have that only an appeal to the legislature can take care of, and I appreciate the panel for taking this on. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Johnson.
Thank you very much. For the record, Betsy Johnson, Senate District 16. While I don't pretend to know all the facts in this story, I think you will be as moved by the Andersons' description of what happened to them as I was when I was first introduced. As Senator Thatcher just said, for all of us who serve our constituents, there are those opportunities where we come across a situation, and moreover, the people behind that situation, who, bluntly speaking, have just been screwed by the bureaucracy. Government weighing in on them hard, and this is our chance to make that right with what I think is a fairly simple bill. This is a story of proud but unsophisticated elderly people in failing health who signed away their family's legacy to ODOT for a pittance, and they now come to this legislature for relief. As it was just described by Representative Vile, if you went to this corner, and I've driven by it many, many times, you would see bustling commercial activity on three of the four corners of the intersection. And on one corner of this very profitable and lucrative site, you would see a broken-down set of buildings, some scrawny Christmas trees, and today's hearing is to explain how you can make this right by this family when you hear their very compelling story. Not only does this restore justice to the family, but it gives them peace of mind of knowing that for all the intervening years from the time their parents signed the documents with ODOT, that they have been unable to set this right. And so this is a story of keeping faith with their elderly parents, of restoring the family's opportunity to use the property for which it was intended, and it rests with us to give them that peace of mind and give them that justice that they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have almost the exact same issue over in Pendleton where the freeway went through, took away the easement to the properties. It's a huge commercial piece of property that they don't have access to, and the access they do have almost exactly like that is too close to the freeway to where they can't come off and then go back into the property because of other statutes. So I will be real interested in working with you maybe on this to see if we can't make it apply to the same piece over in Pendleton.
Through the chair to Representative Barreto. Good. Pass this bill and you've laid a framework that may bring relief to your folks. And I don't disagree that there are times when sacrifices have to be made for the greater good.
Sure.
But there's the expectation of remuneration and fair dealing. And that has not been the case in this situation.
Thank you.
Representative Evans.
Thank you, Chair. I have a few questions. I'm actually oddly familiar with this as well because of friendships up in the Sherwood area and the city council and planning and things like that. So I know that this goes back a ways. I have really two questions about the mechanics of the bill and one kind of about the history that was just explained. The first one is, as the bill is written, is there any involvement at this point by the county or city planning commission?
Chair McEwen, Representative Evans, all of those parties have been approached over the years to try and solve the problem. And the fact of the matter is, no one can really solve the problem without acquiring access through one of the neighboring owners. And the neighboring owner has refused to even talk to the family about any kind of acquisition. So the county's efforts to acquire a throughway, Sherwood City's efforts, the owner's efforts have all been rebuffed. And Sherwood, the county, would love to see this developed, but until an adequate access that meets ODOT's requirements and the county transportation folks' requirements, they can't do it.
So follow up to that specific piece, if I could.
Yes.
So if there was an added requirement, perhaps, for the appropriate planning commission, whether it's the county or the city, depending on circumstance, to concur with this, you'd be okay with that? Because I'm always nervous about going around the planning commission process. Maybe they don't have the authority, but as long as it still fits with their plan, that's my concern on this.
Chair McEwen, Representative Evans, certainly the planning process could not be thwarted by the acquisition of access. All that would do is then allow the property to then go to site design review or whatever level of application was necessary.
Okay. Second question is the shifting of costs to the agency. How is that going to be paid for, do you think, for this?
Well, that should have been, Chairman McEwen, Representative Evans, that should have been something taken into consideration at the time of the acquisition. Rather than give them an access that wasn't adequate to allow the property to be used as it was zoned, it should have been compensation necessary for, at the time, to acquire that access from the neighboring owner at whatever cost could have been negotiated at the time. That didn't happen, so this bill would shift that cost to the acquiring agency.
And the third follow-up is on what Senator Johnson talked about, that ODOT purchase this at a below market price, or I think you used the phrase pittance. Is there a problem? Like, do we need to look at how ODOT is or the formulas involved in terms of purchasing rights from owners? Is that a larger problem in more than just this?
Representative McEwen, Chairman McEwen, Representative Evans. In reality, we think this is a relatively rare case. Although, as Representative Barreto has stated, it does happen. It simply needs to be the policy of ODOT or any other acquiring agency to make sure that if a property is zoned a certain way, that the access they leave them with allows them to use it for that zoning purpose. We're not suggesting that when zones change after acquisition has occurred, that somehow the owner can come back and reopen something. That is absolutely not what we're suggesting. But when it, at the time, couldn't be used with the access left, the agency has obviously, as Senator Johnson indicated, not adequately compensated the owner.
Thank you for bringing this forward. This is a very interesting problem.
Vice Chair Meek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Vial, can we go back to that previous slide? I just wanted to make sure I understand the lot descriptions here. So if I'm seeing those two red lines, I guess to the right of the corner there, yeah.
Yes.
Is that the property lot we're talking about?
That's correct.
Okay, so then the access is over here on the left, which is that an easement then off somebody else's property?
Yes.
Okay, so my question then is, is the owner of that property that's where it says 70-foot elevation drop pointing to that those trees right there, is that going to be developed? Whose property is that?
That's a slough. It could not be developed. And so the apartment complex and the condominium just to the north of that has already taken up all of the developable land in that area. The only access that could really occur is that strip commercial.
Oh, right there.
Right there. And that owner, unfortunately, has refused to voluntarily sell access.
Okay.
But that's where the access is going to have to come to get this property and the property behind that developed property ever developed.
Yeah, that was my question. So, because this is a large lot, the whole lot won't be developed commercial, right? It's just probably a portion kind of similar to the other side?
At this time, it's all zoned.
I'm curious, I guess.
It's all zoned for development, but yes, probably it will be phased in with the front portion likely to be developed first.
And so my question then is the access, is it going to come off of 99 or is it going to come off of Roy Rogers?
It can't come off of Roy Rogers. There is no way that there could be access off Roy Rogers at this point for commercial purposes.
And then I guess, pardon me, Madam Chair, to follow up with that.
Certainly.
Because I'm on the Clackamas County Planning Commission. I know you're on the Planning Commission, too. There's going to have to be traffic studies done, too, though, to allow the access off of 99 right there with the amount of the speed coming in. And nothing's been done, though, right?
Well, all of those accesses that were removed because of the distance from the intersection and speeds there. But if you look back, that's Home Depot across the road right there.
Yes.
And
okay.
The intersection with Home Depot would be where the access would come and then through that neighboring property to this parcel.
Okay. And there, yeah, I'm just, okay. Yeah, just curious about, just trying to understand the, got that there. And is that like some kind of industrial park there, or is that a mall?
That's a low-intensity, mixed-use industrial office.
Sorry, there's glare on the lights here. It's making it hard for me to see. But
excuse me.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Meek. Danielle, would you mind lowering the lights a little bit so we can see the map a little bit better? It might be helpful to kind of clarify what we're looking at. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much. Okay, so now I see where Home Depot's at. Is that an access there, lane? Is that a road, or is it right there with that to the right?
Yes, that's an access that we would ultimately hope to share if the landowner were willing to cooperate. But if not, then the way of necessity would be the way that the court could require that, set an amount to pay that landowner, and in this case we're asking that the acquiring agency would be the party that paid that adjoining landowner.
Okay. And committee members, I know that our senators have very busy schedules. Do you have any specific questions for Senator Johnson or Senator Thatcher? Should we excuse them? Thank you. If you'd like to, you're welcome to stay if you like. I'm just sensitive to your busy schedules.
Thank you for your courtesy, Madam
Certainly.
Chair.
Thank you. Certainly. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No public purpose is served by shortchanging the public by a state agency. And I think as a follow-up to Representative Evans' concerns, I'm just wondering, as a matter of course, one would assume, but I don't want to assume if that's an incorrect assumption, that ODOT and other state agencies, when they're contemplating taking someone's property or disadvantaging them in any sort of way, would be doing some kind of planning around avoidance of literally landlocking landowners from their own property?
Chair McEwen, Representative Witt, in this case, I really can't speculate, and I hope Mr. Anderson has a little more light to shed on this, but the reality is they left them with an access, and it was an older couple who were farming at the time. The access was sufficient to get back and forth to the farm. What it didn't do is recognize that this property was already zoned commercial and likely to be developed that way, and it didn't leave an access sufficient to allow that use, which was certainly going to happen very soon in the future. This was an older couple, frankly, near the end of their lives, and they may not have been even thinking about it, and perhaps ODOT wasn't as well at that time, and that's the problem.
Just a comment. Mm-hmm. The state landlocked these poor people. Thank you.
Representative Noble.
A follow-up question, I think, to Representative Meek. Just confirming, this would in no way change any existing construction, safety, sightline requirements that ODOT and just prudent construction would call for?
Absolutely not. The way of necessity law, as it reads, requires an adjudication which includes any municipal concerns about the legality of an access, sight lines, sight distances, all of those things.
Well, questions for this panel? Thank you very much. Now I would like to call up.
Mr. Anderson has a few comments.
I would like to formally call them, please, if you don't mind. I'm looking for my. Oh, here it is. I'm sorry, I was dismissed. John Anderson, Barbara Anderson, and Catherine Schrack, please. Thank you, Vice Chair Vile. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you.
And in any order you choose, please.
Thank you, Chair McEwen and members of the committee. My name is John Anderson. My address is 18007 Southwest Belton Road, Sherwood, Oregon. And I am here representing myself, my wife, Barbara, and my sister, Catherine Schack.
Good morning.
I want to thank Representative Vile, Senator Johnson, and Senator Thatcher all for the previous testimony. I will try to fill in now the blanks, if there are any, and be open for questions afterwards.
Thank you.
We strongly support this House bill. It hasn't been said, and I told myself I'd only say it once, but we've been at this for 25 years, and we wouldn't be here if we hadn't done everything we possibly could to take care of this situation. It is a good solution to the access of our property. Basically, there were five accesses to the property prior to 1991. 1991 was the year that the intersection went in. This was a blank field here, and so Roy Rogers was moved to crossing 99W here, and then Tualatin Sherwood Road was brought in here on the south side of 99W. So this was new as of 1991, crossing at that position. And that is a time where ODOT, because of safety issues and traffic flow, basically went through a proceedings of eminent domain and condemnation proceedings against my parents. Just briefly, my parents, with regard to physical health, they were elderly. My father was physically distressed, and we have documentation of that, and my mother had the beginnings of Alzheimer's. It wasn't a time for them in their lives to look at the best legal options here. They had at the time, my understanding was the best condemnation attorney in the state, which was Richard Bemis, and they were presented with a large legal bill that they were going to go and fight against the state with regard to accesses, or basically, from my parents' point of view, dad taking care of mom. So that's the situation that I understood was going on. My dad was proud. He wanted to take care of it himself, and that's where the accesses got signed away. But we didn't know at the time, as being the children, that this access would preclude us not being able to develop the property because there was no compensation given for taking away any developmental opportunities. And the first meeting we had with the City of Sherwood, Washington County, and ODOT, where it was, we were told that they were going to take that access away because it wasn't appropriate for development. And if I remember right, that was either 1995 or before. So, and by the way, this did not meet the county standards when it was put in. The county standards for placement of the access to the intersection was is now 600 feet. I believe back then it was 400 feet, and the distance of this access is 215 feet from that access to the road. So we never had an access that met county standards from that aspect. And certainly when we looked at options for development, there was no discussion of what we could develop it for because it never would have met the standards. So legally, we go from ODOT to Washington County to the City of Sherwood and go round and round and round with regard to, well, there's you can't develop that because there's no access to the property. Topography, there's a 70-foot, this is a drainage. It drains the intersection here down through this canyon. This is a 12-foot floodplain here. So north of these trees, north is to the top of the map. So all this is a 12-foot floodplain. So this is at one elevation here, and then this is 70 feet below. This is about a 70-foot drop in elevation as well. So to the west is not access, and they can't move that farther down this road. To the north is a 12-foot floodplain. So, and obviously to the south, ODOT has taken those away. So from a option standpoint, east is the only path. And like I said, for 25 years, we have gone nowhere in this process. So in summary, the existing legal system and where we're at legally is not does not give access and does not solve a problem. Without the process change, we will live as a status quo, meaning that this intersection currently is over capacity. So there's going to be more limited access as that grows in number. There's 60,000 cars a day go through that intersection. So without a solution, we're going to sit here, and there's no plan with that expansion to do anything with the access except live with less access. I appreciate having the ability to come before you and testify. This is a great opportunity. I appreciate that. I'm open for questions if you have any.
Come back up here. Good morning. Ladies, did you have anything to contribute?
No, I think my brother covered it really well.
And it's, your name for the record,
oh,
please.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Catherine Schack. I'm sister to Eric John Anderson and daughter of my parents who had the issue 25 years ago.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ma'am, your name for the record, please.
I'm Barb Anderson.
Hey, Barbara. Did you have anything to contribute this morning?
I was just asking my husband if I should share something that happened years ago when we were at a meeting in the city of Sherwood, and ODOT was present, and the county was present at all. I don't know how many years ago it would be. And Representative Witt, I think, said something that we all at that table knew. There was a county representative who, when we were talking about developing with that access, said, well, the county can't allow that development with that access. We would never do that. And the ODOT representative pushed back from the table, said, well, I think you might want to reconsider what you just said because somebody might think that's inverse condemnation. And so then there was kind of just this pause, but we all knew that is sort of what has happened. And for these 20 years, we haven't been able to do anything because of the access.
Great. Thank you, ma'am. Questions for the Anderson? Thank you very much for bringing this to us. We have three other people who are signed up to testify, so we'll call them up. And thank you so much for being here this morning. I'd like to call Dave Honeycutt, Nicole DeFever, if I'm sorry if I got your name wrong, ma'am, and Mike Eliason, please. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, here in support of 2208. I've been happy to help the Andersons try and navigate their way through this process. Just a little bit of background, and I'll be brief. Senator Johnson and I went to ODOT this summer to try and resolve this, and unfortunately, we've yet to be unable to unring this bell, so we're going to continue to try. Representative Vile and I met yesterday with ODOT, had a productive meeting. We're hoping that we can come up with some amendments to the bill or another meeting with ODOT and anyone on the committee or any other legislator that's interested, and see if we can get a resolution to this. 25 years is too long to have this sitting out there. So we're hoping we can get it done. So thank you, Madam Chair, for scheduling this bill. I really appreciate it.
Certainly. Mr. Eliason? Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I'll go first.
Matters not.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, Mike Eliason with the Association of Oregon Counties. I can't really speak to the exact specific situation here other than to say we very much want a resolution and would be willing to constructively participate in trying to find one. I can only speak to the language that's actually on paper for the bill, which would have a statewide applicability. And really, I think heartened to hear Mr. Honeycutt's statements about meeting with Representative Vile. We would love to see some tightening of the language just to make clear that, for example, it can't apply to where a situation where zoning is one particular or one particular zoning is in place and at some later date, let's say somebody inherits the property, wants to do something different with it, gets a zoning change, but then is not comfortable with the deal that maybe two willing parties entered into in the past around access and wants different access. And I think to some degree the language as drafted tried to get to that, but we would we'd appreciate clearly some tightening of that, but at the same time definitely want to see a resolution to this situation, and happy to help in any way we can.
Great. Thank you. Welcome. And I'm sorry if I pronounced your name wrong.
You got it right, Madam Chair. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Nicole DeFever. I am an attorney from the Oregon Department of Justice. I'm from your trial division. and I am the lead attorney for eminent domain in the state of Oregon. We don't have very much eminent domain happening right now. I have less than 10 cases statewide, but I've been practicing in this area of law for about 8 years now. And I took a review of this bill, and my first concern was, and with all respect, Representative Vile, because I know you drafted it, I think the bill has broad application. It will not just apply to ODOT. It will apply to counties and cities. It could even apply to other smaller governmental entities, districts, what have you. It does not apply only when the property was zoned commercial 25 years ago and still is today. The property could have been EFU land 25 years ago and now zoned commercial. It's very broad brush. And it's also concerning to me in particular that this, and Representative Barreto, that you mentioned, there are other properties. There are times where acquisitions leave properties in awkward situations. But under Chapter 35, which are our condemnation statutes, and the federal law, which applies directly in our statutes, an offer has to be made to the owner. It has to be in writing with an appraisal from an independent appraiser. The owner has to be given at least 40 days to consider that offer, as in no time pressure. Well, the 40 days still might feel pressure to you, but not 24 hours kind of thing, right? And then you have the right to have a jury trial if you don't agree with the amount of the offer. And, of course, there's always negotiations. Very few of our cases actually go to trial. Less than 1% of the cases I get from ODOT, and they settle more than 90% out in the field. So overall, it's a very small percentage that go that far that aren't negotiated out. I took a look at this file. I didn't know the Andersons, and I don't know about their health problems. That's not showing up in the file. But what does show up is that the discussions went on for over a year, so they weren't pressured under even the 40 days, and that they did have an attorney, Mr. Bemis, who is was a very capable attorney, is what I hear through reputation, and that all communications went through their attorney, and that they negotiated and increased the value of the settlement. So, if Mr. Bemis failed his clients and failed to represent elderly clients well, that would be a blemish on his name. When I negotiate with people, and as right in Chapter 35, we pay for the property we take, right, and any damages to the remainder. That's what the value is. And in this case, there was a stipulated general judgment entered with the court, signed by their attorney, and signed by Cynthia Frazier, was the attorney at the time for the Oregon Department of Justice. So that doesn't mean I or ODOT don't have sympathy for these kinds of situations where we'd like to see property be able to be developed. Frankly, ODOT is in favor of developing property when possible. And really, I spend a lot of time with the engineers trying to be creative when we end up in these tough situations. You've got a slough here that makes it hard to just slide the road further from the intersection. You have an unwilling neighboring property owner here, et cetera. We cannot, as a matter of law, condemn an easement and give it to another private property owner. We can't fix this, right? ORS 35.015. You cannot do it under Oregon law. So we would love to fix it, but we can't. Whose rules apply? At this point, it's county spacing standards apply, but ODOT is going to pay for it again, because we did pay for it in 1991. I wasn't there. I don't know about the condition of their parents, but I do know they had an attorney, which is pretty good protection, or should be. So I have concerns that what this statute will do is we'll take cases where we've already paid for the damages to the remainder. We've already paid where people will say, I won't be able to develop this property fully. We've already paid using state highway funds for that. But then we're going to come back decades later and pay again. And you raised the question, I believe, Representative Evans, about the funding. When ODOT comes through with a project, they have STIP funds, they have federal funds, they have a budget for this where they've guesstimated how much it's going to cost. And they have a basis for funding that. There, obviously, the funds for the 1991 project are long since gone. There are no funds there. I work regularly with local entities. Cities and counties have even less funds. So I would love to see a way to help this property. I'm glad to hear that there's meetings with ODOT. I understand that there have been meetings in the past and people have tried to find a solution. Sometimes you end up constrained by geography or unwilling neighbors. But this is, when I looked at this law, I thought this is a broad brush statewide solution that goes back in time forever. I mean, we've been closing access on highways since Ike Eisenhower was president and the I-5 went in. It's not limited to that, right? And so this opens up a lot of extra litigation. The other concern I had, and this is beyond me speaking for ODOT, but it is that there's no balancing for the other property owner. This would be taking private property from one property owner, but there's no balancing here. There's nothing to say that instead of there being an industrial property next door, that they wanted to petition and go through a residential property next door. It doesn't give the court any balancing. And that, from my point of view as a citizen, it's like, well, you know, so this law is drafted in a very broad way. But what I heard is that it's intended to fix a very specific problem. So with that, I would just like to close, you know, the shifting of these costs, I think, can incentivize parties to bring this litigation because the costs will then be paid by the government. As the law stands now, it's only if you're truly landlocked, and then you pay for the access, and your property gains the benefit of that access. But here, the government is paying to give this to you, and it is not something that is budgeted, and it's not something that's part of a project. So if you have any other questions for me, I'm happy to answer them.
I have just one. Representative McClain.
You mentioned just briefly that there was some kind of a federal application. Was it a federal application on the statute, or what? I didn't understand
that
part.
Yes, the Oregon statute adopts the federal law. We're frankly required to if we want federal funding dollars.
So what is that federal law that you're saying?
Well,
applies?
We adopt a number of portions of the federal law that are required. The Federal Relocation Act is part of it. So if a business is required to relocate or a residence is required to relocate, there's payments that are made. The 40 days requirement is also adopted down from the federal law.
Okay.
There's laws that prohibit the relocation dollars being tied to the condemnation dollars. So you can say, I want to relocate, but I want to fight the condemnation dollars, right, so that they aren't tied and there's not any pressure in that way. So ODOT has to follow a great deal of the federal laws and regulations from the Federal Highway Administration.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Vile.
Yes.
Have you ever tried a way of necessity case?
I have not, but my colleague Al Deppenbrock, who trained me, did, and I followed along that case. I believe it's the only one case that I know of that happened at DOJ in the time I've been there, and it involved a way of necessity where they were trying to go through forest lands that had marbled murrelet endangered species on it.
I've tried a number of way of necessity cases on private lands, and I can tell you that your concern about balancing the interests of the adjoining owner are exactly what the judicial process is designed to make sure is done properly. So if that adjoining owner would be impacted, that would certainly be factored into the value that was given there. A follow-up, Madam Chair. The I will say that the concern about zoning not changing, I think, is legitimate, and this bill could be tightened to make sure that this only was used in cases where the zone wasn't changed in the interim. We don't want to go back and say, well, shucks, we didn't anticipate that we would get a better zone at the time that this was acquired. So I'll concede that. But I do think that your comments about shifting costs, and if you have any further comments, I'd certainly be glad to hear them. Once again, we're only asking that the cost shifts if the landowner is right, if when the judge hears the case and is convinced that, in fact, there was an injustice rendered at the first chance, that the attorney's fees and the costs would be paid then by the party that rendered the injustice. It would apply, I'll concede, to way more than ODOT. It would apply in cases all over the state. It is, in fact, intended to be broad, but I do believe that unless the state has been much less careful than I think they have, we're probably talking about a very, very limited number of cases. We should not, however, adopt a law that's just designed to solve one person's problem.
I agree.
And so that is why this was drafted, so that it would apply to cases, however few they may be, that are the same as this.
To respond, I agree that the way of necessity bill provides for payment of value for the damages to the property taken, the other private property owners. But what this doesn't have is any balancing of whether you can apply to put a commercial access through a residential subdivision or something like that. And then to respond with the I really do want to respond to where you say where an injustice was done. As a lawyer, when we've done a lawsuit that, as a matter of law, includes the damages to the remainder, now this is basically upsetting res judicata and coming back and bringing another bite at the apple. I think in situations where we want to try and help people in specific situations, I understand that. But I have lawsuits that I've just finished in the last 4 or 5 years where we've paid hundreds of thousands of dollars in damages to the remainder. The jury verdict form just says just compensation. They're not supposed to, according to the case law, break it out. So how am I to know then if they come back and say, well, injustice was done, which I don't see in here that injustice was done in the condemnation action, and upon a review of the condemnation action, we find it was somehow unfair. That would be like a reopening of the condemnation action. But this law allows them, regardless of whether that $100,000 was a fair compensation for the damages to the remainder, to now come back and get another access at the cost of the government. In other words, they get paid for it twice. Maybe not these people. The Andersons seem, it seems like a genuine problem. But I'm saying this bill allows that. And that's a concern.
Representative Witt, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of the potential for paying twice, I've seen the, excuse the expression, the body blows to the Andersons over time. If someone runs into my car today and your insurance agency pays me, it doesn't excuse you from having to pay me again 5 years later if you run into my car again a second time. And I'm very pleased that the state saw fit, hopefully in a timely manner, to compensate the Andersons at the initial time that the taking took place. Subsequent to that, what was a fair compensation at that time doesn't preclude them wanting to come back for redress. We've now shut down access to their property. They accepted a term. They accepted a settlement. They accepted money for the taking of their property. on the provision that they had a certain level of access. Subsequently, that level of access was removed. We've damaged them a second time. And the original settlement may no longer be adequate as we continue to pile body blow after body blow on these poor people.
I am quite sympathetic to the Anderson situation, and I have other situations where we have, you know, ODOT comes to me and says, can you help us try and find a creative solution? But I'm testifying here for ODOT because I believe that this law that you're proposing is much broader than fixing a situation where we feel like the Andersons or other very specific situations. And I don't know in Pendleton if these people were paid significant money or not for that reduction in access. But this law doesn't say where the court finds an injustice has been done and has reexamined the condemnation proceedings and finds that this was somehow unfair. This law allows anybody to come back. And so how do we help people without exploding budgets and letting some people get paid twice? And because that's not good either, right? And I understand it's a delicate balance. I don't think your job is easy writing these bills to accomplish what you want.
Oh,
yes, sir.
Thank you. Perhaps there are two issues here. I don't know. And first, is it Ms. DeVries?
DeFever.
Ms. DeFever, I'm sorry. I don't have it written here, so I apologize.
It's okay.
Thank you very much for protecting the state's interests. And you've done an extraordinary job, and for that I thank you. But I am just concerned, Madam Chair, that the bill may be one issue, and the resolution of the damages that have been done to these people, while this bill tries to address that, may not be helping this particular cause, and then maybe I'm wrong, and I don't intend to put words in your mouth, but that was the feeling I was getting from what you were telling us. And if there's a way that this bill can be a vehicle to find resolution to this problem, then perhaps more discussions are in order at this point. But this needs to be wrapped up. And two and a half decades, I mean, This is a cloud on our state, and I understand that you have done everything in your power to protect our legal interests, and for that I thank you. It's time for the state to be a good neighbor here, and sometimes our legal obligations and the fact that we've got to be a good neighbor, that too is a balance, and it's time to be the good neighbor. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Witt. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Someone refresh my memory again. What is the current zoning on the said property here?
It's commercial.
Commercial?
Yep.
All right.
The back portion is unlikely to be developed commercial. But
if not testifying,
okay. All right, so it's fair to say that in a real-world situation, the Andersons will be forced, if nothing changes, to sell this property at a distress price to a developer who will manage to get her done somehow. Just a few years down the road, you can probably expect that property to be fully developed and dragging in a lot of income because they have the money to get her done, where the average individual probably doesn't in this case.
Thank you. Representative McLean.
I just want to be clear that my concern is for the family on if this bill does pass, because it doesn't necessarily give them the answer yet. They have to go through another legal process. They have to go through another possible court case, from what I heard you say, because they have to go through all of the proving of the fact that if they do get an access in a particular person place, that in, if they can get the condemnation of this other neighbor, that they still have to prove that it's not going to hurt the facilities and or the zoning or the development that's happened already. So I'm seeing this as maybe not a way to help the actual family, but that this may be one of those exceptions where we ask for, you know, a solution, like you said, a creative solution or something. And I don't even know if that's valid, but I don't want to see us put this family into just another, you know, another system that causes them still not to have an answer. And so did you say that there would be, when they have an opportunity to go through, if this bill passed, that they would have an opportunity to just get an answer, or do they have to go through the legal process to prove that they have a right to compensation?
The way of necessity statute and this bill proposing to amend it both allow for a petition to the county governing body. And that is defined earlier in the statute than is shown on this draft bill. But I believe that can be the county board or it's the circuit court. And in my understanding, most of the time, the county board punts, which they're allowed to the circuit court, and it's handled in court. So it would be a court proceeding. They would need to show all of the standards that are on Section 2 on the backside of the printout here, that it's located to cause the least possible damage, that it can be fenced or gated if required by the county, that it doesn't connect to a public road in a way that creates a traffic hazard, all of those things they would have to prove. But then it doesn't mean that there's no damage or any impact. It doesn't mean that it's not going through a sensitive area. It just means you pay for it. The same way the litigation is supposed to pay for it in the condemnation. Mm-hmm. The difference is that normally property owners come through here and then they pay for it themselves, because they're getting the benefit of that new access if they're landlocked before and now they have access. The property's worth more and they've paid for it. Here, the property already has access. It needs additional access, but the government is to pay for it. Okay. Even though we're giving it to a private entity.
You answered my question, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Barreto.
If I could just add one thing. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think every property situation is different. The thing in Pendleton is similar, although there's been statute. They had access. The state or ODOT bought some of the accesses, but now the access is too close to an intersection, and because of statute that's changed from then until now, now it nullifies this access as being usable. And so I think all of these things are different, but I think as the government comes in and makes these changes and then nullifies the ability to use that property, then I think something should be, there should be a vehicle, you know, to come back and say, hey, look, we've got this property. It's not usable according to the law right now, and something needs to change.
Right, and I think that raises a good point, Representative Barreto, that the statute doesn't address if there are not just changes in zoning, but changes in traffic volume, improved safety standards, and other things.
Correct.
Since many of it would apply to acquisitions going back decades. And, you know, there are situations where it was a fair price at the time the case happened, but then the law or life changes. That does happen.
We've almost exhausted an hour, and we do have other business to do this morning. So thank you very much for being here. Thank you for your testimony. I'm going to assume that there will be more work to be done here, and I'll look forward to you all coming to us again with other suggestions on this complex problem. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2208. And seeing our good colleague in the room, once again, out of order. Let's see, I want to make sure I get the right one. I'm going to open a public hearing, possible work session on House Bill 2575, and welcome Representative Gomberg to the dais. With a dash two amendment, I believe.
That's correct, Madam Chair. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Oregon coast. I'm back. As you'll recall, we attempted to make a technical fix to this original measure, and in the process of doing that, inadvertently increased the maximum threshold for dory trailers to the federal maximum, and at that point, this committee raised some entirely appropriate concerns about safety issues there. To answer a couple of questions that were raised during the last hearing, we have about 350 commercial dory operators in Tillamook County, many of whom are not active, but 350 registered. I think it's also important to note that the that there is really no distinction between commercial dory operators and recreational dory operators, except that the requirement is to have mechanical brakes on commercial trailers. So we have two groups of dory operators, one of whom is subject to this law, one which is not, which is why we're trying to grant this exemption. The Dash 2 amendments that you have before you now reduce that weight threshold that you were asked about, you were asking about, down to just below 12,000 pounds. That's less than half of what we had in the Dash 1 amendments. It covers every single one of my dories. I hope it addresses everyone's concerns, manages safety, and also allows these good folks to keep operating and catching fish. I'm happy to answer any additional questions.
Are there questions for the good representative? Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So originally we had talked 10,000, and then now it's at 12,000. I think in the first hearing, I think 10,000 was the number mentioned. I think I wrote that down. Where did the 12,000 come from?
Hey, representative, it's, let's say, I want to make sure we get this right. A trailer transporting a dory, unless the trailer is operated in interstate commerce, has a gross combination weight rating of more than 11,999.
Excuse me, 11,999. $999.
Less than 12,000. Madam Chair, Representative Barreto, after our last meeting, we made a number of phone calls, polled the association, talked to some dory operators, came back with the understanding that this would include everybody who's currently operating, no matter how large the dory, how large the catch, or how large the fisherman. So we decided that we would just level it at a little bit higher than the original number.
Yes, sir.
So the other thing I wanted to ask was, in recent history, have they not really maintained their brakes, and that's the issue here, or they didn't have brakes, you know, but have there been many accidents over in this area from the inactive brakes?
Madam Chair, Representative Barreto, thank you for that good question. I'm not aware of any accidents. Operating without brakes has been the historical precedent, as I indicated, that the recreational dory operators continue to practice without brakes. So this has been the historic practice. As you correctly pointed out, there are some increasing options for brakes that would not be as subject to the surf, the sand, and the salt. But this has been the historic practice, and I'm sure that the industry will evolve. But I'm trying to deal with problems that we're facing today.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Representative Gomberg? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I will turn to Vice Chair Vial, and we will see if we can navigate a rather circuitous route to getting this bill passed. I'm going to now open a work session on House Bill 2575. Vice Chair Vial.
Chair McEwen, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2575-1 amendment.
Vice Chair Vial moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2575-1 amendment. The motion is not debatable. And this pertains to the fact that we passed the Dash 1 on Wednesday. We need to basically rescind that and begin again. So that's what this allows us to do. Is there any objection? If not, then the rules are suspended. Vice Chair Vial.
Chair McEwen, I move we reconsider the vote by which the Dash 1 amendments dated 2-8-17 were adopted.
Vice Chair Vial moves to reconsider the vote by which the committee adopted the Dash 1 amendments dated 2-8-17. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to the motion? If not, the motion carries and the measure is once again before the committee in its original form. Vice Chair Vial.
Chair McEwen, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 2-23-17.
Vice Chair Vial moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 2-23-17. Is there any discussion? Everybody's good? Seeing none, is there any objection to the motion? If not, the motion carries and the amendments are adopted. We have a back page. Vice Chair Vial.
Chair McEwen, I move House Bill 2575 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Vial moves House Bill 2575 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Meek.
Aye.
Vice Chair Vial.
Aye.
Chair McEwen.
Aye. The motion carries and the bill is sent to the floor. Representative Gomberg, would you like to carry this bill?
Happily, Madam Chair, I thank the committee for its consideration and its patience.
You bet. Thank you, sir. So, Tim, note that Representative Gomberg will carry this bill. And I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2575. And we'll get back in order a bit. I'm going to open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill, and I'm going to run these in combination, House Bill 2458 and House Bill 2482, please. And I believe we have a witness list. Yes. I'd like to call Mr. Mann on House Bill 2482. Mr. Mann, you're my hero of the day. If you've driven from Wallowa County to testify, thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you.
Please, sir.
I presented a letter. I don't know if anyone had a chance to read it.
I believe it's up on OLIS.
Okay.
Our committee has had access to the letter.
Okay, yeah. Perfect. Mm-hmm. I watched the last session online, and it just seemed to me that there was a lot of questions and unanswered concerns that I felt I could answer and that pertain to my situation.
And, sir, I want to do a couple of things before we actually begin. I'd like to turn to Mr. Walker and have him give us an update on what these two bills actually do.
Yep.
So we can kind of familiarize ourselves with the conversation.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, House Bill 2458 modifies statute governing gas dispensing in a non-retail location allowing self-service between the hours of 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. and allows the installation of a self-service device for payment and allows retail customers to dispense Class 1 flammable liquids during certain hours. And House Bill 2482 allows a filling station, service station, garage, or other dispensary of Class 1 flammable liquids to allow self-dispensing 24 hours per day in counties with a certified population of less than 40,000 residents. But I'd also like to note that there is an amendment in the works that will combine both of these bills, and as soon as we have it, we will do the necessary work to move this along.
And I just heard that this morning.
Some changes to the kind of the premises of these two bills. Please begin, sir. And your name for the record again?
Harold Garrett Mahon.
Thank you.
And I own a small gas station in Wallowa, Oregon. And it's been in my family since 1972, and I just feel that removing the time limit on self-serve would benefit me in multiple ways. And one of the concerns people raised was the loss of jobs. Well, in my position, I have to have someone at the store. No one will lose a job over people being allowed to serve themselves gas. I won't make any more money. I'm not going to be able to fire anybody. It would just be beneficial to my customers. When my grandpa passed away last year, and he's the one that bought it, was the first day I've been closing in 5 years. And with the way the bill is written currently, anyone that came through legally could not get gas. Before someone brought up that it's available, well, if I take off a holiday or am closed for any reason, legally they cannot get fuel. And being that I live 30 miles away from the nearest other gas station, and all holidays last year, the first time I've been closed in 5 years because I left my pumps on, which is not legal, but it was recommended that I go ahead and do it since I couldn't show up and turn them off. And that was one of the concerns brought up at the last meeting was disabled people having the ability to get their cars fueled. Well, if we're closed for a day, there's no way they can get it at all if the pumps are turned off. So my concern is that we need to try and get this through for the small towns that don't have another way to do it.
Sir, I just want you to know I appreciate, first of all, you coming here. I know how far it is to Wallowa.
My husband and I have spent a great deal of time in your part of the world up around Cayuse Flat and Hat Point and down on Lightning Creek and chasing nice. Critters around over in your part of the world. So I'm a great big fan of where you come from.
Thank you.
And I have family from halfway. So so thank you for being here. And I'm very interested that you've brought your story to us this morning. It's a different situation when you're 30 miles from the next gas station.
Yeah.
And you kind of characterizing that for us, I think, is very important. So thank you for that. Representative McClain.
When we were here last time, if you watched it online, they were talking about the initial cost mm-hmm. to put in, you know, the ability to have people pay by their card.
Mm-hmm.
So are you okay with the way that's laid out in the
bills? Actually, the way that was laid out, it's a double-edged sword for me. I just had to buy new pumps 2 years ago because the dispensers I had started failing. It was almost a $40,000 investment to get new pumps. But now I am able to take cards all day, all night. Part of the system I'm set up with actually allows me to take Pacific Pride cards with one of the companies I'm with and other fuel cards. But because I'm a retail location, it limits me to when they can pump their own fuel, too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Representative Barreto.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Palawa also. So, mm-hmm. Harold, I wanted to thank you for coming over. You wrote a letter the last time
yep.
that went to the committee, and coming over here in person and taking that effort to come over and explain, I think,
yep.
is very good. Thank you.
Yep.
Representative Evans.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I too, appreciate you coming over. I have a question, though, because
yep.
2 years ago when we passed the bill, your situation was exactly what I thought we were passing. So why... how are you not able to have people use your pumps after hours? Because I thought that's what we did.
They can after hours.
Okay, so the issue is full scale while you have someone in the store.
When the bill first went through, the first version, it was allowed to pump whenever I was busy or gone or an attendant wasn't available. And then it was amended to have the hours set mm-hmm. six to six.
That's
well, correct. Part of the problem is 7 days a week doesn't always happen. Holidays, Sundays. I mean, I have had Sundays that I've showed up to work 16 hours and paid to be there for 16 hours. There's 800 people in my town. So, I mean, there's days that I'll go hours without anyone walking in the door.
And follow up to that, if I
yeah.
could. What's the volume in terms of gallonage that you normally go through in a year in that situation?
It varies greatly from summer to winter.
But over years?
The best way I can relate it to you is, like, right now I go through roughly a tanker load a month.
Okay.
So there's gas stations within a reasonable distance of me that'll go through three tanker loads a day.
Right.
So, and we have all the same costs. I mean, I pay the same insurance, the same fees.
Right.
So, like I said, if I'm closed for a day, legally, I cannot allow someone to pump their own fuel. So, from 6 in the morning to 6 p.m., they have to be closed.
Okay.
So.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And then, like I said, I have a friend that owns a gas station in Enterprise that he does not plan to allow people to self-serve. He is going to remain a full-service gas station. So this isn't something that we should consider as being the new law or the new norm by any means.
Any other questions for Mr. Garrett? Once again, sir, thank you so much for your effort in getting here today. We appreciate it greatly.
Thank you.
It is my understanding that these two bills, there's work to do on them. They will be reemerging in the one form next week. We have not seen that yet. When we do, it will be posted, and you all can take a look at it. So we will be rolling those bills to Wednesday, March 1st, and we look forward to seeing the next derivation of what's to come. So thank you so much, sir. Safe travels home.
Thank you.
I will close the hearing, possible work session on House Bills 2458, 2482, and we will move along to a public hearing, possible work session on House Bill 2022. And turn to Mr. Walker. Please enlighten us on volumetric mixers.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, we previously heard this bill on the 8th of February. And the bill excludes volumetric mixers from definition of fixed load vehicles. As you may remember, there is some confusion at the county level whether a volumetric mixer actually is a batch plant that is not readily movable and is therefore subject to property tax. And this would clarify that situation so that the counties understand that it would not be qualified as a fixed facility and is not subject to property tax. There is one situation in which a company was being charged both the property tax and the weight mile tax, and this will remedy that problem.
Thank you. I'll turn to Vice Chair Meek.
Thank you. Chair McEwen, I move House Bill 2022 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Revenue.
Vice Chair Vial moves House Bill 2022 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and that it be referred to the House Committee on Revenue. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, that was Vice Chair Meek.
I'm sorry. My apologies, Vice Chair Meek. Vice Chair Meek moves House Bill 2022 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and that it be referred to the House Committee on Revenue. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative Evans.
For the record, I'd like to say thanks to everybody that's helping try to move this along. I know there was a little bit of a hiccup having to do with revenue. I'm hoping that, especially since the county itself that is doing it is okay with this, that we can see it move forward through revenue and get to the floor.
Great. Thank you, Representative Evans. Is there any further discussion? Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative
McClain.
Yes.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Representative
Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Wade.
Aye.
Representative
Barreto.
You vote.
What are we voting on? The volumetric 20.
Oh, aye.
Vice Chair Meek.
Aye.
Vice Chair Vial.
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes and the bill is sent to the House Committee on Revenue. And I will close the public hearing, a possible work session on House Bill, let's see, on, I'm going to get my number right, House Bill 2022. And we will move on to, make sure we get all our paperwork here. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2462. Mr. Walker? I'm sorry.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, House Bill 2462 provides increased weight limits for trucks with fully functional idle reduction system and trucks that use natural gas as a fuel source. If you'll remember, on 210, we heard this bill, and this has to do with trucks with idle reduction systems and natural gas powered trucks who, because of the equipment that is required, are at a disadvantage as far as carrying freight, and this would clarify that they can carry increased loads to compensate for the weight of the equipment. There is no expenditure impact and a minimal revenue impact, and this is ready to move when you would like.
I will turn to Vice Chair Vial if he would like to assist me.
Sure. Chair McEwen, I move House Bill 2462 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Vial moves House Bill 2462 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Representative McClain.
Yes.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative
Witt. Aye.
Representative Barreto?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Vice Chair Meek?
Aye.
Vice Chair Vial?
Aye.
Chair McEwen?
Aye. The motion carries. I made I want to finish this and then back up to the last bill. Do we have a volunteer to carry this one? 2462? Would you like to carry
sure.
that, Vice Chair Vial? Okay.
And I would like to go back to House Bill 2022. Representative Evans, would you like to carry 2022 for us?
Yes.
All right.
Yes,
I would.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Make sure we get that taken care of. Evans to carry and Vile to carry. And I will open a work session on House Bill 2695 and turn to Mr. Walker to update us on where we are with this.
Chair McKeown, members of the committee, we last heard this bill on the 8th and on the 22nd. The bill exempts certain towing vessels and their towed barges from requirement that Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots licensee pilot the vessel. We have a dash one amendment in front of us that would limit the effects of the bill to the crew's pilotage grounds on vessels originating in British Columbia. There's no fiscal impact. I'm sorry, there's a minimal fiscal impact and a no revenue impact.
So there's no referral required?
No.
Okay, thank you, sir. Vice Chair Meek.
Chair McKeown, I move to adopt the dash one amendments dated 2/20/2017.
Vice Chair Meek moves to adopt the dash one amendments dated 2/20/2017. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Vice Chair Meek.
Chair McKeown, I move House Bill 2695 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Meek moves House Bill 2695 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Wilson.
Yeah, Madam Chair. Sorry to impede progress because I know there's a move on to push this one through. I went back and paid attention to the initial hearing last night, and I'm still trying to figure out, given the long history of no bar pilot required, I'm still confused about who made the telephone call that, or who exerted force or pressure here to change that law for a while to require one. I've never been clear on that in testimony as to how it went from a long history of no bar pilot required to suddenly there being one required, and then, of course, not being one required. So do we know exactly how it was imposed for that short period of time?
I may turn to the director of the Board of Maritime Pilots, who I think is more familiar with the history of this than I certainly am. And if you don't mind, I'll call Mr. Burnett up to answer your question.
That's great. If I could just have that one question answered, I think I'd be fine. And forgive me if I'm the only one that didn't get that.
Madam Chair and Representative Wilson. Eric Burnett, Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots. I'm executive director. I went back and took a look for that answer, and we do have early in my days as executive director, we do have a March 25th of 2015 note that came from a company called Amex, which ran U.S., which contracted with a U.S. flag tug barge operation out of Canada, and they were the first instance that I am aware of that this happened. This predated the Southport issue that came in front of us, and what instigated the complaint about Amex not using a pilot, I'm unaware of, but that's the earliest mention that I can find of it in our records. It's an incomplete answer. I apologize for that, but that's the best I could find. I don't know the motivation behind the Amex issue initially.
Okay.
All right. We do have a motion. Thank you. Thank you very much,
you,
Mr. Burnett,
sure,
for spending a number of hours with us over the last couple of weeks. I hope it was productive time for you.
It has been. Thank you.
All right. We have a motion on the floor. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk call the roll, please?
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Representative Barreto?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Vice Chair Meek?
Aye.
Vice Chair Vial?
Aye.
Chair McEwen?
Aye. The motion passes. And unless anyone has a burning interest in pilotage grounds and would like to carry this bill, I would be more than happy to carry it. Right. Thank you very much. Anything for the good of the order today? And I will. Oh, my apologies. We have now, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2695 and open a work session on the possible introduction of committee measures. Thank you, Mr. Walker. Mr. Walker is going to go through Mr. Walker will go through the list of LCs that we have been asked to introduce this committee. Bills here. Okay. Actually, we'll move it over here. Vice Chair Vial, please. We'll turn to you.
Madam Chair, could I ask for the opportunity to ask a few questions before we engage in this?
On these particular LCs? Because these are, excuse me. Do you these are just being introduced. This does not indicate any endorsement or support for any of these measures. These are just coming to our committee as requests that we consider hearing them. And we do have the relating two clauses Mr. Walker can read if you would prefer.
I would appreciate that, Madam Chair.
That would be fine.
Thank you.
I was trying to be expeditious, but we do have it in two forms. If you'd like the detail, you may have the detail.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, LC 3989 is relating to transportation. LC.
I'm sorry, do we need to get a motion on the floor first?
I believe what we can do is I can discuss the relating two clauses, and then we can go into the motion to
and then we can read each of the numbers.
Correct.
Okay, just make sure we get it in the record correctly.
Absolutely.
Vice Chair Vial.
Once again, Madam Chair, I wonder if I might ask the chair for a brief recess to visit.
Absolutely.
With the chair.
We'll stand. We are back in order. I am going to turn to Vice Chair Meek. Our Vice Chair Vial. I'm going to get these straight one of these days. Vice Chair Vial.
And Madam Chair, if we could ask Tim to give us at least a quick relating clause read of the LC drafts that are proposed.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Walker.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, LC 3989, 3988, 3986, and 3985 are all committee placeholder bills, and they are all relating to transportation. LC 3619 is relating to vehicles, and this is a DMV Treasury Dealers Cooperation Bill. LC 1934 is relating to governance of mass transit districts, and this has to do with the TriMet Board. LC 3380 is relating to automated motor vehicles, so this is discussing automated vehicles.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair, I very much appreciate the comments that the Chair made earlier about the fact that introducing these as committee bills in no wise indicates support for or otherwise positions on any of these bills by any member of the committee. I, however, do have reservations about committee bills, but I understand that often it's important for us to get the work of the people done by using committee bills, which typically have been brought by interim work committees, et cetera, with the reservation that I'm very hopeful that in the future we can minimize our committee bills, perhaps even make sure that we have someone specifically responsible for each of these bills. I'm going to go ahead and move that the following legislative concepts be introduced as committee bills. LC 3989, dated 1/27/17. LC.
I believe that. Okay. Please go ahead.
LC 3988, dated 1-27-17. LC 3986, dated 1-27-17. LC 3985, dated 1-27-17. LC 3619, dated 1-11-17. LC 1934, dated 12-14-16. LC 3380, dated 2-17-17.
Thank you. Vice Chair Vial moves that LCs 3989, 3988, 3986, 3985, 3619, 1934, and 3380 be introduced as committee bills. Is there any further discussion? Representative Witt.
Madam Chair, could we be told the subject matter that these deal with?
Do you have more detail, Mr. Walker, that you could provide us with?
Chair McEwen, Representative Witt, would the summary of the bill be sufficient?
Probably don't even need that much.
Okay.
Would you like the relating to clauses read again, sir? Would that be helpful? Or would you like a little further narrative?
Yes.
Okay.
Please.
Okay. The first four bills are all relating to transportation, and it is just asking the Department of Transportation to study options for improving highway infrastructure in this state. Since the relating to clause is general, then it may well be used for something.
That's perfect. That what you just said is so helpful. Thank mm-hmm. you.
LC 1939 requires the governor to consult with metropolitan planning organizations before appointing director to board of certain mass transit districts.
1934, Madam Chair, on that one. You said 1939. Just wanted to make sure.
It was a good year. And LC 3380 establishes procedure for automated motor vehicle manufacturer to submit certificate of compliance to Department of Transportation. And this has to do with automated vehicles.
Thank you.
And LC 3619 make some changes to the requirements for vehicle dealers. It specifies that the department may impose penalties against vehicle dealers who do not comply with the regulations, and designates that the Department of Transportation can designate a vehicle dealer as an agent. And I believe that's all.
Madam Chair, I appreciate the indulgence in that of the entire committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, for your interest. Any other comments, concerns, or questions? All right, Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Vice Chair Mee.
Aye.
Vice Chair Vial.
Aye.
Chair
McEwen. Aye. And the motion passes and the measures are introduced as committee bills. Thank you all very much for your thoughtfulness as we move through this. Yes, Representative.
I would just like to apologize. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to just apologize to the committee for being out in the hall and holding up a vote because I got a little long-winded with one of my constituents. So.
Thank you, sir, for that. And we actually, we didn't miss a beat. It was just a matter of seconds.
Okay.
And Vice Chair Vial.
And Madam Chair, I just want to express my appreciation and apologize for any miscues that I take as I am trying to work through these things. And I appreciate the chair's helpfulness in steering us in the right direction.
Certainly, sir. And we are actually 10 minutes ahead of schedule today. I want full credit for that. On that note, we are adjourned. Thank you all. Oh, wait. Oh, ho. I want Tim to go over Wednesday's agenda next week. We should do that before we adjourn, if you'll indulge me for one more minute.
Can you give me a moment?
Just so you're aware of what's coming up next Wednesday. So everyone is fully prepared.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, on March 1st, we will have an informational meeting on bonding in the color of ODOT's money. We will also have a public hearing, possible work session on 2482 and 2458, which are the self-serve bills. Hopefully, we'll have an amendment back by that time and we'll be ready to move it. We will have three public hearings, one on House Bill 2910, 2745, and 2320.
And if you don't mind announcing that we will not be holding Friday committee meetings.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, we will not have committee meetings on Friday, March 3rd, Friday, March 10th, or Friday, March 17th.
As our workload is determined right now, we can go those 3 weeks. If things change, we will certainly let you know. But enjoy your Fridays for the next 3 weeks, ladies and gentlemen. And on that note, now we are adjourned. 3 weeks, ladies and gentlemen. And on